Thanks so much for the opportunity to be here today. And I'm going to be talking to you about some findings from a multi-state study called Rural Families Speak. And I'm going to be talking to you about unmet healthcare needs among this sample of women from 16 states in the U.S. Per APHA's guidelines, I'm going to quickly read you our presenter disclosure, which is for Eric Carlton, my first author, and myself. And per the following, personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. No relationships to disclose. So just to give you an overview of what I'm going to be talking about today, I'm going to give you a little brief introduction about the background and need for this study. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our sample and the methods we used, the results that we found, and some implications and conclusions for public health research and practice. So first, the background and need for this study. Rural residents and women both experience health disparities, including access to medical care. And research has shown that the use of ecologic models are promising in terms of identifying and addressing health issues. And these models posit that behavior is an interplay of both individual and systemic factors. So low-income rural women face specific individual level barriers, and these include limited financial resources, lack of health insurance, lack of information about things such as medical conditions, provider availability, and Medicaid eligibility. They also experience perceived stigma, especially regarding mental health issues. They as well experience systemic level barriers, and these include distance to facilities and care providers, lack of transportation that's affordable and reliable, and especially recently we've seen this with gas prices, and lack of qualified professionals both for mental health and for primary care. So the purpose of our study was to understand the demographic, individual, and community factors that influence whether rural low-income women visit a physician when needed, and forego or delay filling prescriptions. We also want to use these findings to posit implications for public health interventions related to unmet healthcare needs among rural women. So let me tell you a little bit about our study sample. It's called Rural Families Speak. It's a USDA-funded longitudinal study of rural low-income families. We had 413 families in the first wave, and they lived in 23 rural counties across the U.S. We defined rural using Butler and Beal's rural-urban continuum codes. The counties in which our respondents lived were in rural-urban continuum codes between 6 and 8. And to give you some idea of what that means, they lived in counties that had anywhere from less than 2,500 people to up to 20,000 people in the counties. And the states that participated in the study are shaded in green on the map. The purpose of the study was to find out how rural families were faring during and after welfare reform. So it included multicultural women aged 18 and older. They had at least one child under age 13, and that's because TANF requirements or welfare requirements mandate that there's at least one dependent in the household. They had incomes of less than or equal to 300% of the federal poverty line. And we recruited them through various programs serving low-income families, including the TANF program, the WIC program, food stamps, Head Start, County Extension Service, public health clinics. We collected qualitative and quantitative data in face-to-face interviews, and we did one interview per year for 3 years. Now, the sample for this particular analysis comes from Wave 3 data. And the reason we use Wave 3 data is that we had a more extensive health survey. So as we were analyzing data from Waves 1 and 2, we were seeing that health and healthcare access were significant issues for the respondents in our study. And so we expanded the health survey to get some more information about what was going on with them and their health status. It left us with a sample size of 266 women who had complete data on all the variables that we were interested in looking at. That's actually a little bit slightly less than the number of women who we retained in the study. We actually retained a little bit over two-thirds of the moms, but these are who has complete data for the analysis. So looking at our variables of interest and our methods, we looked at two variables. The first was whether in the last year the respondent needed to see a physician and didn't go. And this is a self-report variable based on their perception of need and their perception of accessing based on that need. We also looked at whether in the last year she did not fill or delayed filling a prescription given to her by a doctor or other healthcare provider. And both of these were dichotomous yes-no variables. We looked at four sets of independent variables. We looked at demographics, including age, which we measured continuously, race, which we measured in four categories, white, non-Hispanic, black, Latina, and other, education, which we measured in three categories, less than a high school education or equivalent, and more than a high school education, and we included in the more than a high school education technical school. Employment, yes or no, and that was either full-time or part-time, it was just any employment. Marital status in three categories of single, married or living with a partner, and divorced, separated, or widowed. And poverty, and we measured that continuously as a function of the percent of the federal poverty line for the household income. Then we looked at three intrapersonal variables. We looked at chronic health problems and the number of problems that the women reported having. We based the problems on Sturm and Wells list of 15 problems associated with poverty. And they include things like high blood pressure, arthritis, asthma, diabetes. We looked at depression, or specifically clinically significant depressive symptoms, which we measured using the Center for Epidemiologic Studies depression scale. And we used the cutoff of 16 or above to indicate clinically significant depressive symptoms. And then we also looked at injury or illness in the last year, and specifically asked the question related to an illness not associated with chronic health problems, something that came up, or some sort of injury, you know, a fall, a broken bone, a sprain, etc. We looked at two interpersonal variables, health variables, which included health insurance status, and that was insured or not. It didn't matter whether it was public or private insurance. And then we looked at their perception of whether they thought that primary care providers were available in their community. Lastly, we looked at three community variables, and these variables actually came from the Community Health Status Indicators Project. And we that project has a whole host of variables based on county level data on various health pieces of health information. And so we linked these variables from the Community Health Status Indicators Project to the counties where we had recruited our subjects. So we looked at the primary care physician rate per 100,000 population, and that was continuous. We looked at whether or not there was a community health center in the county, and that was simply yes, no. And then we looked at whether or not the county was designated a health professional shortage area, and again, that was yes, no. So to analyze our data, we used Stata, and we calculated proportions for all the variables, and then we conducted a multivariate logistic regression, and we entered our data in four blocks corresponding with the four levels of influence, so demographics, intrapersonal, interpersonal, and community variables. So looking at our results first, you can see the average age of our respondents was just under 31 years. Most of them were white, followed by Latina, black, and then other. Just about over half had a high school education or less, and then 47% had more than a high school education. Most were either married or living with a partner, followed by single and then divorced, widowed, or separated. Almost 58% were employed. The remaining were unemployed. They reported a mean of 1.67 chronic health conditions. 40.8% of the sample had clinically significant depressive symptoms. 30% reported having an illness or injury. 71.5% were insured. As far as whether they thought primary care physicians were available, actually 89% thought that they were available in their county. The primary physician rate per, and sorry, there's a typo there, it should be per 100,000, was 55.2. If you want to think about a comparison, I looked up on the same data set. For example, San Diego County has a primary care physician rate of 91.5 per 100,000. Washington, D.C. has a primary care physician rate of 227.6 per 100,000. So that sort of gives you a comparison point. 16.2% lived in a health professional shortage area. 31% had a community health center in their county. And then for both the outcome variables, not accessing a physician and delaying or foregoing filling prescriptions, both were around 30% reported doing that. So we ran two multivariate models, one for each outcome variable. And what you'll see in the models is that for not accessing a physician, none of the demographic variables were significant. Going over onto the next page, you'll see that chronic health conditions were significant. Women who had more chronic health conditions were actually more likely to not see a physician when they needed to. And I'll talk a little bit about this in the discussion. Additionally, you'll see in the final model, for example, women who had clinically significant depressive symptoms were 4.4 times as likely to not access a physician when they thought they needed to. Interestingly, injuries and illnesses did not have an effect here. Health insurance clearly did. I think we all know that. Women who had health insurance were less likely, or I should say were more likely to go to a doctor when they needed to. And those who believed physicians were available also were more likely to go to a doctor when they needed. Also interestingly is that none of the county variables were significant in predicting, which seems counterintuitive to what we know and have been talking about with regard to rural health. But again, I'll talk a little bit about why I think that is when I get to the conclusions. So looking at our second outcome variable, delaying or foregoing prescriptions, the one demographic variable that was significant was educational level, and interestingly, having a higher education actually resulted in them not getting prescriptions. So again, I'll talk a little bit about why I think that is. I know, again, it sounds counterintuitive, but in working with this population, it's about managing resources. So I'll talk a little bit about why I think we found that. Then going to our health variables, you'll see that injuries and illnesses were significant. So women who reported having an injury or illness were actually almost four times as likely to not get prescriptions filled when they were given to them. Again, health insurance, women who had health insurance were more likely to get their prescriptions. And once again, you'll see that the community variables actually did not have an effect in this model as far as whether or not women filled prescriptions. So again, just to summarize the results, women were significantly more likely to access a physician if they had health insurance and if they believed primary care physicians were available in their communities. They were significantly less likely to access a physician if they had clinically significant depressive symptoms, if they had more chronic health conditions. Women were significantly more likely to delay or foregoing filling prescriptions if they had injuries and illnesses in the last year. And they were significantly less likely to delay or forego filling prescriptions if they had health insurance. So looking at what all of this means in terms of public health practice and research, rural women living in limited resource families are at risk for delaying seeking treatment for symptoms associated with both chronic and emergent health conditions. You know, there's been a lot with the recent economic downturn that we've had. There's been a lot in the paper recently about, for example, aging populations in terms of making decisions between medicine, food, shelter, you know, paying rent, getting a prescription filled. These data were collected before any of this has happened, and, you know, we see the same things, and the qualitative data that we have support this. So there's a lot going on with these families in terms of trying to figure out how to manage resources and prioritizing needs. Perceptions of availability clearly are an important driver of health decision making, and I think that that has pretty important implications for public health practice. depression is a risk factor for not seeking physician treatment. And I think this sort of underscores the need to address depression among rural populations. Looking at our qualitative data, one of the things that we've seen is that the symptoms that are associated, the somatic symptoms that are associated with depression, many of these women don't identify as being symptoms of depression. So things like irritability, fatigue, you know, weight changes, appetite changes, they attribute them to something else. You know, if they have sort of the more traditional feeling sad, feeling blue, then they sort of identify depression, or maybe that depression may be something going on with them. But some of the more somatic symptoms, they don't really identify that as being associated with depression. So this comes to education around what are symptoms, and also doing education to reduce stigma so that people are not embarrassed or afraid to receive treatment. Lastly, low-income rural women with multiple chronic health conditions likely are addressing only the most severe of symptoms, and or they're prioritizing their health conditions and seeking treatment. So I think, again, that's why we saw women with more chronic health conditions were more likely to not seek treatment when they needed, probably because they thought, well, you know, it's not as bad as X problem, or it's not as bad as Y problem, and I really can't afford to go right now. So they basically sort of take an inventory of what are the problems they have and what are the most significant needs that they have. And if it's not as bad as something they may have had previously or something that's ongoing, they may just not go to the doctor because they think, well, not as bad as, you know, X or Y, and so I'm okay. And we really can't afford it right now anyway. We're also finding, again, with the qualitative data, that a lot of these women are actually putting their children's health needs and their partner's health needs before their own as well. And so rather than taking care of themselves, again, it with limited resources to address issues, if their child is sick, they'll put their own needs aside in order to get their child to the doctor and get their child treated. So very quickly, to go through limitations, this is not a representative sample, so again, these findings may not be generalizable to all rural low-income women. The data are self-reported, so respondents may have under- or over-reported their physician and prescription access. They were also cross-sectional. Again, we didn't look at longitudinal data here, so we can't make any causal associations. And the measures we looked at for unmet healthcare needs really focused more on on illness behaviors as opposed to preventive behaviors. So, you know, looking more at preventive behaviors, you may see something different than what we saw with these data. And then the other issue, as far as the county data not coming up as significant in the models, one thing that we found with our rural families is that their closest healthcare provider may actually be in the next county over. So we had county-specific data based on the counties in which they were residing, but actually it may be closer for them to go to the next county in order to get access. So that may be why we saw what we saw with regard to not those variables not being significant. So implications for public health. We need to focus not only on increasing capacity, but also increasing knowledge about available services. Health insurance continues to enable and or hinder access. So in addition to getting more people insured, we also need to increase access to supplemental programs such as prescription assistant programs. They're highly underutilized in rural areas, and they could provide significant assistance. We also need to conduct additional research on rural women's healthcare decision making, including looking at preventive versus emergent utilization, management of multiple chronic health conditions, and looking at the effects of perceptions and misperceptions on provider availability and then healthcare access. So quickly, we did receive some funding from USDA, as I mentioned, and also from NIH, and these are our opinions, obviously, and I do want to acknowledge my student, Eric Carlton, who could not be here at the meeting this year.